Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in Wisconsin politics. Let's get away from Madison and let's go to Washington.
Yeah.
Speaker Paul Ryan is in the eye of a huge storm over health care.
Yes.
I don't have to tell you that. I don't have to tell our readers, our observers this, but our followers. But so there's a vote coming up this afternoon. And let's just quickly go over the American Healthcare Plan would scrap a income-based subsidy plan for an age-based credit plan. And the late amendments, JR, that have just come in the last 24 hours would give states more power to determine what's called essential health benefits, to determine maternity care, mental health coverage, substance addiction. And this would be the criteria for plans under which you could get a credit. I want to be sure to get the terminology right. And also would give states more authority for work-based Medicaid. So how do you see Paul Ryan?
He's caught right on the sausage-making process. And what I mean by that is that they started their bill that had to pass as is, but they've been making changes because you have these factions in the caucus, the House Freedom Caucus,
yes,
which is more conservative members.
Which won some of these changes I just talked about.
Moderates. And so sometimes we talk about a balloon where you push air on one side and goes out, you know, pushes the other. They're pushing the balloon back and forth, trying to find a place where they can get the 218 votes they need, I believe it is,
yeah,
to pass this bill. So you can't lose one more than that. And so right now it's kind of an ugly process. The questions I have pulling back big picture are, one, if they can get done this afternoon, and that's still a big if, what happens in the Senate? We've got at least three senators, I think, maybe more, who've said, Republicans who've said.
Rand Paul, Collins. Yeah.
I think.
Cruz is, who knows?
Murkowski from Alaska raised concerns, who have said, not really there right now. So if this does pass, what happens in the Senate? Is it going to be all for naught? Donald Trump basically is priming the pump to throw Paul Ryan on the bus if this doesn't succeed.
I want to ask you about that because I checked Bloomberg News Service before I came in, and that's their top headline.
Read the Trump, same, similar story.
Trump is ready to throw Ryan over under the bus if this doesn't.
Unhappy with the decision to do health care first. You know, happy with his leadership. I saw a tweet saying that, you know, it's in the White House saying that if this succeeds, it's because of Trump. It fails, it's because of Ryan. So they're putting it all on him, essentially. That's not exactly the best place to be, I would say. But there's all this intrigue about what's going to happen and what's about Ryan long term. Now, there's this national narrative a little bit about, well, if it fails, that means Ryan's speakership is on the line. Talking to people around here, I'm not sure about that because who else would run that caucus? I mean, that's the thing. If Ryan falls 5 votes short, I'm just pulling that out of thin air,
yeah,
somebody else probably will fall 15, 20 votes short. You know, he's the one person you see who can run that caucus. But the majority could be on the line. Now, that's a big set of steps from here to next fall. But if they fail, if you're a Republican voter who's been told for 6-plus years now, if you give us a Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican White House,
mantra,
we will repeal Obamacare.
Repeal and replace.
And
repeal and replace. Say it with me now.
And if you fail, what's my motivation next fall to go back and say, okay, I'll give you one more try?
Yeah.
So there's a lot on the line for these guys today with what happens to this vote.
That same Bloomberg story, which you and I both read, said the chief of staff, Mr. Priebus, could have trouble here if it doesn't pass. He's the one. He and Mr. Bannon took the message to the House Republican caucus last night. The president wants a vote up or down Friday. That's it. It's just absolutely fascinating.
And, of course, there are people who have noticed that in the Trump White House, the president's never blamed for anything. It's always somebody else who's failed.
That's
to
right.
Come to something.
Okay, but before we get off this topic, what's the upside if Paul Ryan passes this through the House? Big?
What he has said is that if Republicans can pass this, then it clears the way for tax reform, the entire agenda they want to do. If they don't do this, it mucks everything up. So this is a big test for them, how they get this thing through.
And by the way, they have a budget to pass by October.
Yes.
And we've seen the blueprint of Mr. Trump, and he scales back everything except military spending, national defense, Social Security, and Medicare. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to go wonk on you, JR.
Go ahead.
Just find this so intriguing. Who gets the federal marketplace? Who has been able to obtain insurance through the federal marketplace in Wisconsin? So I'm just going to give you some numbers from the Fiscal Bureau for 2016. 239,000 Wisconsinites obtained coverage through the federal marketplace. 84% of them received some federal assistance. Mm-hmm. 53% of them are female. And I just want to make one more point. Of the 239, 33%, a third of them, are ages 55 through 64. And if you add in those ages 45 through 54, it is 53% of those that were buying, obtaining coverage through the marketplace.
And I'll go political on you.
Aren't you impressed? Okay,
yes.
I'm wonky. You go political.
Those two age brackets tend to vote in higher numbers than the others you listed. One of the big risks for Republicans right now is if they pass this bill and if people start seeing an impact ahead of November of 2018, you could see the impact of the ballot box. So there's that either or where I talked about before that if they don't pass something, Republicans could say, well, I'm going to stay home. If they do pass something and people start to feel it, what are they going to do next fall? They take their anger out on Republicans? That's a big risk for those guys.
Well, and also, I was so struck by a graphic in Sunday's Journal Sentinel. And so I want to credit the Journal Sentinel and the Kaiser Family Foundation for this graphic, which we both have in front of us. And first of all, you have to put it into perspective. They gauge the cuts in the annual tax credits to pay for health care for a 60-year-old in Wisconsin with an income of $30,000. Now, the graphic you and I are looking at shows the districts, the regions of Wisconsin that are most killed, or excuse me, Mr. Duffy and Mr. Kine's congressional mm-hmm. districts. So
both of which
there,
went for
I
Donald,
go wonk, now you go political.
Both those districts went for Donald Trump this past fall. There has been this national narrative developing about the Trump administration where the people who like brought them to power are the ones that lose the most under his budget, under this healthcare approach. Will they feel betrayed? Now, there have been other stories I've read that have guys saying, well, yeah, they're going to cut A, B, and C because, you know, we can't pay for it anymore. So I'm okay with it impacting my life, but because it shouldn't be there.
Right.
It's interesting to watch how that plays out next year.
So just indulge me once more on wonkiness.
Go ahead.
Part of the debate is how do you get reimbursed for health care? Right now we have subsidies. We're mm-hmm. going to go to credits under the American Health Care Act. The whole other part of the debate is putting a cap on Medicaid costs. Mm-hmm. So I looked up who gets Medicaid care in Wisconsin. The projections from the Fiscal Bureau for fiscal 2018, 1.125 million, 1,125,008 Wisconsin residents. 44% of them are children. 44%. So let's break that down. Non-children, non-elderly disabled, 139,530. And elderly, 66,518. This is elderly that qualify, you know how it is. The linkage to Medicare, I'm unclear. I'm unclear of. So that's wonky. You want to put a political?
I haven't got the minute-by-minute, blow-by-blow of every amendment and change they proposed. They were making rewrites, apparently, last night at some point.
I think they're probably still making them.
So we don't know what's going to happen exactly, or I haven't seen a good analysis this morning yet of how this impacts states, for sure. The risk for Wisconsin is Medicaid has been a major driver of our budget for a number of years. We're in a good position right now. They don't want the Walker administration to see the apple cart overturned with this. So if they want to go to block grants or something like that, as long as Wisconsin's not penalized for, in the Walker administration's mind, being good stewards of the taxpayer dollar, okay. But if something happens that hurts us budget-wise or really turns the apple cart over for us,
right. That's
where the concern comes in. The current budget that Walker's proposed projects modest growth in Medicaid expenses, which, to be honest, that's great news. Usually it's a huge driver. So they're okay in part because of that Medicaid budget. What happens if that changes? That's the unknown for me with the state budget.
General fund for Medicaid is 18% of mm-hmm. all general tax collections. That's second only to K-12. So it's a huge driver, and it's up 85% in 5 years. In fiscal 13, general fund for Medicaid was $2 billion. Projected fiscal 18, 3.5, an increase of 85%. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm sorry, I'm done being wonky. But Now let's listen to Eric Borgerding, who's the president of the Wisconsin Hospital Association. He sat right there and he talked about two numbers that I had not heard before. And so let's listen to Mr. Borgerding. It's about a 1 minute clip.
We've seen almost a $600 million reduction in uncompensated care from because more people have insurance.
Now let's, okay, that's important. A $600 million reduction in uncompensated care.
Correct.
Which means your hospitals are getting more payment for the services they provide.
Right, and those are often services that they may have been providing previously, but we're not getting reimbursed for. Now, that's not all going to go away. Not everyone who has coverage today under Obamacare is going to lose their coverage under what comes next. So, you know, when I talk about that number, I'm not saying that that's all going to go away, but there's no question that, I mean, just look at the CBO, and we've been looking at the numbers ourselves. We take the CBO numbers, we look at other extrapolations of the CBO numbers, and we're looking at probably about 300,000 people that could lose their insurance between now and 2026.
In Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin. That's a smaller number than what the CBO estimates, because the CBO is building into that an assumption that Wisconsin would have expanded Medicaid the Obamacare way.
Yeah.
I don't think we were going to be doing that. So we actually backed that assumption out of our own numbers, and we come to about 311,000.
JR, those are two big numbers. Let's just rehash them. First of all, Eric Borgerding said that Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, has resulted in $600 million going to Wisconsin hospitals in charitable care that they used to have to write off. Point two, by their calculations, the WHA, 311,000 Wisconsin residents could lose health coverage under the American Health Care Act by 2026, but I want to point out X number of those are choosing, as young millennials, live forever types, to not buy insurance because the mandate is gone, right? Mm-hmm.
That is the risk. Health insurance, the pool is made better when you have more healthy people who don't need it in. As they progress through the pool and get the older side, they can use it more and replenished by younger people. Not the younger people, the healthier people, it's a problem.
Okay. Now, let's turn to the Marquette poll was back for the first time in about 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. So I want to use some of their numbers, but and we're not going to have time to get into Charles Franklin explaining how he was wrong. But anyway, let's look at the new numbers. First of all, on health care reform, they asked two questions. What is the future of Obamacare? 6% keep it, 54% keep it, but amend it, tweak it to fix the problems. 28% repeal and replace, 8% repeal and do not replace. How do you interpret this?
That people fear change, one thing. Two, the keep it and fix it sounds a lot better than repeal. And the poll that Marquette had this week reflects the national polling we've seen where this American Health Care Act is not very popular. And talking to Republicans, they'll tell you it's kind of odd to them that in just after 6 years of pounding that's not out of Obamacare, they somehow lost the message battle on this bill in just a matter of months. And they're kind of not quite sure why they weren't better prepared for that. But that's one thing that comes through is they've kind of on the short end of the stick with the message war about this bill.
Okay, and also staying with the Marquette poll on the same subject, what would happen if the American Health Care Act became law? And let's look at what they said. 48% would say health care costs would go down, 25% stay the same, 18% increased health care costs. Do you attach any value to that? Any importance?
No, like I said, I think the Republicans feel like they're a little bit behind the messaging battle right now because they're now calling it Trump Care and Ryan Care. And what was interesting in the poll as well is it talked about Obamacare. If you ask people about the Affordable Care Act, they have a more positive view of it.
It's true.
When you call it Obamacare.
Right.
That's an interesting, I'm not quite sure why.
It shifts.
I have a couple of theories, but that's kind of an interesting dynamic of what's going on with that bill.
Okay, then for the first time in 5 months from the poll, we got approval ratings for five major politicians. Mm-hmm. You and I were very interested in, let's go to President Trump, 41.4% approve, 47.5% disapprove, 11% no opinion, don't know enough, even though he's the president. Are you surprised at that? Because nationally, I think it's Gallup and CNN have him at 37.
So what's interesting is, one, if you go back to October, now they didn't ask job approval, they asked personal favorability. And he was like way upside down, like in the mid-30s for favorability. So where he started from, he's kind of improved, yeah. in part because Republicans have come home. They have a better view of them than they did before. At the same time, he won with 47.22% of the vote in Wisconsin. He's at 41.4%, which shows you that he won in part because people didn't like the alternative of Hillary Clinton as president. He's just not a well-liked figure right now. I don't know if he ever will be in Wisconsin. But, you know, you don't want to be a president where you're 2 months into your term and you're underwater in a state like Wisconsin.
Yeah. Okay, and you and I are keenly interested in the approval rating for Governor Walker, just because he's laying the groundwork to seek a third term next year. 48.4% approve, 51.6 disapprove. Now, I know you're going to say 51 is underwater, but I think that 48 was a high water mark for
It's the
recent.
Best his numbers have been since right before he was reelected in 2014. Now, remember, these are registered voters.
Yes.
So when we get to like election
That's
time, look at
caveat.
Likely voters.
Yeah.
So I went back and looked. Remember in 2014, he won by like 5 points, I think, something like that, 5 or 6. With registered voters, the week, 2 weeks before the election, he was at like a 2 point plus for his favorability rating, or job approval rating, I'm sorry. What that shows you was, why I'm bringing that up, is that likely voters came out because they were motivated for Walker, mm-hmm. so that's why he won by 5 points. But with the same pool, like apples to apples, he's still kind of a polarizing figure, even though he won re-election. So 48-46 to now, he's in okay shape. Another number to watch is a right track, wrong track number. And that's back on positive territory.
That's true. I think it's 51. Go ahead. 51-48, something like that.
So in talking to Walker's people for the last year, after he dropped that presidential race, his numbers went in the tank. They kept telling me, be patient. Our plan is he's going to back out in the state, engage with people, get him out to like Rhinelander and, you know, St. Germain and Wausau and Eau Claire and, you know, all these smaller places, have him do like these listening sessions. Show voters he's engaged. He hears them. Let us get the budget out. Let him do what he wants to do with that. And then we'll see where we're at. And it sounds like they're kind of the right ballpark so far. He's getting better, getting traction. So right. Now, we still have a year and a half to the election. He hasn't announced yet. Don't know Democratic opponent. So there are lots of caveats here. But he seems to be righting the ship at least a little bit at this point from what he's been doing.
But he's, as you said, he's getting out of Madison, both in the town hall, even mm-hmm. if it's by invitation only. And then lately he's been going to K-12 schools to announce what his additional state aid for schools mm-hmm. would mean for Germantowns and all these other schools.
And look in the Marquette poll. More school, more aid for education, 80%, 70-80%. You know, a job work requirement for welfare programs, 79%. I mean, these things are popular. Now, the gas stuff, the transportation is still a mess.
Well, you're right, and we don't have a separate graphic on that, but 44% said pay for transportation programs from other programs. Do they really mean cut school aids? Do they really mean cut the UW? Do they really mean cut prisons? Do they really mean cut revenue sharing
what
to a local government?
Charles Franklin said was that's the easy way out. The answer was the easy way out because they didn't ask voters, okay, well, what would you cut instead? So given the option of raise a gas tax.
35%.
Do fewer road projects.
Yes, 9%.
Or borrow more. Yeah. Remind me, we borrowed $1.5 billion roughly
over the last 4 years.
They went, okay, I'll take that because that one sounds the best right now. So
until it erases the 5% UW tuition cut, until it means less money for schools, which is already in jeopardy a little bit because of the self-insurance. But that's a whole other thing. Okay, we're getting off on tangent. Senator Ron Johnson, approval rating 39.4, disapproved 34.3. No opinion, haven't heard enough. Again, 1 in 4 respondents.
What's been fascinating about
he just got reelected.
Senator Johnson is that outside of like October, then November of last year, that's where he's been the entire time. He's only got this like burst of attention in the reelection campaign. Otherwise, he's kind of in that territory where people don't have really strong feelings about him. It's just kind of an odd dynamic for him. It's weird.
And also, when I think of Senator Johnson and these poll numbers, I think about his promise. This is my second and last term in the U.S. Senate.
Now, part of it, though, is remember, with U.S. Senate, even though you're a U.S. senator, it takes some time, a decade, to build up really kind of a base, you know, other than Herb Kohl, who everybody knows Herb Kohl, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Feingold's numbers weren't that great when he sought re-election the first time. In terms of, like, his, if I remember correctly, his you know, how well people knew who he was, he'd only been elected one time. You know, if he had... We'll see, like, in another 4 years, where is he at then? But he's kind of like this odd figure of just not really inspiring people to be really passionate for or against him.
Right. Okay. Democratic Senator Democratic U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, who's up for re-election in November of 2018, 40% approved, 35% disapproved, 24% no opinion. You know, those numbers are within the margin of error to Ron Johnson. Mm-hmm. So our two U.S. senators are polling about the same.
He was elected in 10, she in 12, so it's not that odd. Now, on the one hand, with Baldwin, though, she's been around a lot longer. So remember, Ron Johnson came out of nowhere in 2010 to run for the Senate. Baldwin had been in the House for a long time. She'd been in the state legislature. She'd been in the Dane County Board. So she's been in politics for a while. Now, when I went back and looked, though, April of 2015, Ron Johnson was at 33-28, I believe. So now, at that measure, she's in much better shape than he was in terms of her profile.
Yep.
Now, at the same time, you'd expect that because she's been around longer. She also has the Toma VA issues she's going to have to deal with. There are a lot of landmines for Tammy Baldwin in the next 18 months before she seeks re-election, but she starts from a bit stronger position than where Ron Johnson was the same period in 2015.
And then the final Wisconsin politician who I want to talk about, Speaker Ryan, who we mentioned earlier in the middle of this firestorm in Congress right now, 45% approve, 38% disapprove, 17% no opinion. I thought fewer than that would have no opinion on a high-profile speaker of the U.S. House.
Yeah, his numbers haven't been that great recently, and there's a poll from Public Policy Polling, I think it was a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. It's a Democratic firm. I think the president had better numbers in the first district than Paul Ryan did. You know, he's kind of in this, again, the sausage-making process is not pretty. It's not going to do a whole lot for you back home with your numbers.
Well, but just a P.S. on that, the Koch brothers have now announced they're going to spend millions to support Republicans who vote against the American Health Care Act.
To try and offset President Trump threatening to go after them, yeah.
Right. Okay, let's take a look at the Marquette poll. One other issue, immigration policy. Should those in the U.S. illegally, number one, stay in the country and apply for citizenship, 66%, 2 out of 3. Stay in the country, 17%, but not apply for citizenship, 17%. Leave jobs, leave the U.S., 14%. Any takeaways on that, my friend?
No, I got more about the build a wall stuff, though.
Okay.
That one?
Let's go to build a wall. Should the U.S. build a wall with Mexico? 59% no. What about no, don't you understand? 37% yes, go.
Franklin pointed out in the poll presentation that of the people who approve of Donald Trump's job performance, 25% don't want a wall built. So 75-20, I think it was. So even some of his hardcore supporters don't want a wall built. It seems like that's something more a line that inspired people, like a certain segment of the population. Then people thought of, yeah, that's what I really want. It's very kind of fascinating that even his supporters are going, yes, I want that wall kind of thing.
Well, and okay, the third question on this issue that they asked, do you support the President Trump's accelerated deportation policy? 50% no, 43% yes. This gets into the emotional DACA thing, where kids were brought in. Okay.
Remember, too, with Donald Trump, he won Wisconsin, but he won it with 47%. Mm-hmm. All right? So he's still underwater that. And on top of that, he won it when he wasn't very personally popular. So I don't know we're ever going to see him be somebody who's going to get a lot of, you know, be a 55% guy in the polls in his first term in Wisconsin.
Okay, all this stuff is heavy. Mm-hmm. JR, what do you and your two boys think of gummy bears?
They are good.
They are good?
Yes.
Okay, and they're going to be made in Wisconsin beginning in 2020, that announcement yesterday.
A $242 million plant, 500,000 square feet in Kenosha County.
400 jobs.
To start, at least, yes.
But we don't know what incentives going to be offered by the state, the county, or the local governments.
Weedick said it was still working on the final details of that and had to go through the board and everything before it could release.
We also don't know, even though Governor Walker said those will be good-paying jobs, we don't know what those jobs are going to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So this
it's the continued success story of Kenosha County, the county of my birth. That entire area along 94 has exploded. You got the Amazon Distribution Center. I mean, 94 has expanded to 8 lanes down there. They've got all this infrastructure. They've got the business parks. I mean, the place is humming with new companies. And in part, and Governor Walker asked about this during the news conference on Thursday,
yeah,
it's part because of the dysfunction in Illinois. Well, it doesn't hurt to have Illinois being a mess and things looking better up here right now.
But I was struck, the parent company decided, we're going to build a manufacturing plant in the United States, and it's going to be in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. That's a big deal.
You get easy access from where that is.
Symbolism.
To O'Hare Airport. So, you know, one of the major hubs for national flights. It's centrally located. There are lots of advantages to putting it there.
And one of the reasons the governor held the press conference was he announced that our unemployment rate I don't know if it's adjusted or unadjusted. Probably
seasonally
unadjusted.
Seasonally adjusted.
3.7%.
Lowest since November of 2000, roughly
right
around there.
And it comes after companies in Chippewa Falls and Beloit are also expanding. But I thought it was very ironic. I don't want to dwell on it. The governor said, holding up his gummy bear bags, but I can't eat them because I gave up candy for Lent. Just a little bit of irony.
At the same time, what's interesting is while he's talking about the unemployment number, he's still dogged by the jobs promise of 250,000 new jobs in his first term. He's 6 years in and still hasn't hit it yet.
Yeah, he hasn't. He hasn't. That's going to be a big issue next year, the campaign. Okay, stock picks, rising.
So Tony Evers, state superintendent, is now up on the air, TV ad. Knox is challenger Lowell Holtz for the deal.
One of them says, I'm going to drive myself. Yes. I will not need a driver. Go ahead.
So here's the thing. We've been talking about this for a while, that Lowell Holtz needs outside groups to come in and help him out a great deal if he's going to beat Tony Evers. We are 2.5 weeks out from the race and have seen no signs at all of an outside group coming to help Lowell Holtz. Now, that could change. They can get up on the air very quickly, but if there's not something up in the air by Tuesday of next week, it's a sign it's not going to happen. And so for Evers, this buys, we checked the TV buys, about $110,000 in the five markets it is. It's in. That's not a huge amount of money, but add in that there's no Supreme Court race top of the ballot to drive turnout, that Tony Evers got 70% of the vote in the primary in February, and there's no, I can see right now, organized effort behind Lowell Holtz. Evers is in good shape. Now, that can change in 2 weeks if the money is there and the TV's there, but without it, I think Tony Evers is in
good shape. But I'm reminded of an email that Lowell Holtz wrote saying outside groups would come up with fundraising and that. Okay, mixed.
So Russ Feingold, when he lost to Ron Johnson, we figured he'd come back in some way, shape, or form. He is back with legit action. Now, remember when Russ Feingold lost in 2010, he created Progressives United like that February of 11. And that was going to be a group that was going to help progressive candidates both directly and indirectly. And it became a way for a couple things. If you're a cynic, it's a way for Feingold to find a place for his aides to land, to maintain an email list, and kind of have a campaign awaiting when he ran again.
Yep.
Now, his backers will argue, hey, put that aside, we still helped a lot of people, but it became a huge issue in the race in 2016 because most of the money did not go to other candidates. Feingold drew a salary for a while from the group. A lot of his aides were working there, so it became a cloud over him. Legit Action, from what we can tell so far, is not going to be a PAC. It's a 501c3 or 4, one of the two. His longtime chief of staff is the only employee so far. She told us that Feingold's not going to draw a salary. The question for this group is, okay, the Progressives United, we all thought, okay, Russ is going to run again. So there's a certain like attraction to that group, right? Now, Jackson, is Russ going to run again? Don't think so. And two, the progressive kind of sphere of influence, now you've got Bernie Sanders, you've got Elizabeth Warren. Like the kind of the vacuum that Feingold filled a bit in 2011 has kind of been filled by others now. It's going to be a different dynamic for him.
But I have a follow-up question. When Feingold forms Legit Action, some will say, gee, Russ, is this a sign you would consider running for governor in 2018? Are you picking up any vibes that he's interested? None.
No.
None. Okay. I'm not either. We agree. Falling.
Sheriff Clark, so David Clark is no stranger saying controversial things to talking tough. But I think it was about a week ago he went to Facebook and posted basically making fun of Mayor Tom Barrett for getting beaten with an inch of his life by a man wielding a tire iron back at State Fair Park in 2009, I think it was.
Where Barrett was a good Samaritan. Go ahead.
Basically, I'm not going to use the language that he used, but said he got his butt kicked by somebody by showing up at a crime scene. And this vague threat of, you know, do you want some more of this kind of thing from Sheriff Clark? Look, talk to people on both sides of the aisle. They think this guy has gone off the deep end at times, that he's been unnecessarily controversial, that he's basically becoming this figure in a way, this Trump-type figure, all right? He's not really that engaged in his job. There are lawsuits pending against the department, all this kind of stuff. But the interesting thing is, in talking to people, is that Clark is kind of playing a game with us a little bit. He knows, when he says outrageous, that we'll cover it. Yeah. Dems will get outraged. Then he can go to people and go, look, they're attacking me because I'm the one who can speak the truth. And then he says something more outrageous, and then the cycle starts all over again. He is basically priming the pump for a landing spot on conservative media somewhere. I mean, we've been talking about what he's going to go with the Trump administration for a while. That hasn't happened yet. But he has got a landing spot, if he wants it, we think, in conservative media somewhere doing something.
But when he continues to tweet like this about Mayor Barrett incident more than 10 years ago, That doesn't, I don't think, help him in the eyes of getting a Trump administration job. Do you?
I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know what to think about that.
Okay.
But it does keep this kind of this following he has. It keeps him ginned up. And he's got a career after being sheriff. What it's going to be, I have no idea. And talking to people, they do not think he's going to run for U.S. Senate next year. I talked to people who doubt he could win a re-election as sheriff next year. But he's got something coming up. Okay. I'm not sure what it is yet.
Okay, a programming note. Now, I've got grandchildren that need to be spoiled, so I'm going to miss next week. So here's your job. You and John Johnson, Public Radio, you're going to explain what happens today in the U.S. House, okay, for
Do
Mr.
Our
Ryan?
Best.
Okay, I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind from March 24th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.